Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So one of the things I almost tweeted out the other day, and this is something I do feel, politicians take credit for things all the time that they had nothing to do with, mm-hmm. and they take blame for things they had nothing to do with too.
Yep.
The problem mm-hmm. is that there's like this myth that, you know, oh, I put you in charge and all of a sudden, like, you know, like you're going to make it better because you're a nice person and the other person's not a nice person. It's like, no, the problem is that you have deep, thorny problems and really ineffective bureaucracies that aren't delivering. Right. And if I put like a different person in charge, like you still have a lot of the same problems. And so this is one of the big reasons why things are getting so nasty here is that we're all just fed up and frustrated. Like value's not being delivered. You have these completely impersonal bureaucracies that are just, you know, failing. And then and we act like it's like, you know why it's failing? Because that person's an asshole.
Yeah.
And then we put you in charge and then it's like, oh, you mean it's still failing? Oh, shit. And then, you know, I mean, yeah. Philip Howard called this like we're playing you lose, I lose while the people lose.
Right.
And during that entire period, our trust is just going down and down and down and down, like down and down. And that's where we are now. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Forward. That's funny, isn't it? What we are going to talk about today, I think, has been the dominant piece of news I've seen over the last number of days, where there is this big concern, fear, picture that I happen to think is relatively accurate, that we are going to see Donald Trump versus Joe Biden in the rematch in 2024. There was an op-ed in the Washington Post a couple of weeks ago saying that this is going to be the matchup, and also that there's a concern that our democracy, and this is going to seem hyperbolic to a lot of people, but that our democracy may not actually still be in place post-24. And Bill Maher had this very, very widely circulated video about essentially the same topic, that if you think that Trump's going to come back and play fair and accept results, he won't. And so there's a great chance he wins straight up, but there's a great chance that regardless of whether he wins or loses, he's going to say he won. And that could result in widespread political violence, riots, protests, strife, the next gen civil war.
What you just said is terrifying. But let's break it down. We'll share the video. Bill Maher did like a 15-minute rant last Friday, if you're listening to this, right? Yeah.
Yes, and most of the things that he said, I totally agree with. I mean, some of these things are objective reality, to the extent that a reality is an objective thing anymore. But I guess that's one of the major problems. So one of the facts I outline in my book is that our relationship with the media might be the defining element of the political parties at this point, where 69% of Democrats have high trust in media, and only 15% of Republicans do.
Right.
If you're an independent, it's 36%. So if you have 85% of Republicans who think the media is bullshit, and a lot of those people also think the election's stolen, that Trump should still be president fair and square, and then they come back in 24 led by Trump, there's going to be kind of a revenge, just desserts, payback motivation for many of them. And then if they're told that Trump wins, regardless of what the vote totals look like, they're probably going to be there to enforce what they see as their guy's rightful victory.
So listening to that video is like listening to you off the record, and this is the first time we're talking about it on the record. So he made three predictions. He was like, Trump's going to run for president 2024. He's going to win the Republican nomination. And the third one is that no matter what happens, he's just going to announce that he won. And the other stats he said was that he'll be backed up by people he's putting in place, and we can talk about that. But also what you just said, 2/3 of Republicans believe the election was stolen, and 21 million believe the use of force is necessary to restore order. And about half Republicans believe we should split from the union or should have two different states of the United States.
You know, we can talk about what the heck that would look like. I mean, I have no
idea. Anyway, that was like
that was the Bill Maher rant for sure. So let's break it down in order. Does Donald Trump run again would be the first domino. Mm-hmm. Let's see. He's raised well over $100 million as of a couple months ago. He's having rallies around the country. There's really little reason I can see for him not to run.
Yep.
The only two things I could see that would keep it from happening are, number one, health.
His health, yeah.
Because he is in his mid-70s. Mm-hmm. Though apparently someone told me he's lost some weight lately.
Good for him, I guess.
And then number two would be if there is some kind of legal trouble or entanglement that people talk up sometimes that he might be indicted about this and that.
Right.
I find it dubious that he's going to wind up in that kind of legal trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, yes, he does run again.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the second part of the puzzle is, does he win the Republican nomination?
Right.
And that seems to be a big yes. Last I saw, he had 65% approval / support among Republicans who would decide this thing. And of the other contenders, one of them, Nikki Haley, has just said publicly, I will not run against Trump.
Mm-hmm.
That's one good way to stand his good side. Mm-hmm. And another person said in a private event that I somehow heard about, Ron DeSantis said that he also would not run against Trump if Trump decides to run. And Ron's public statements are, you know, make that seem very believable.
Right.
And so if Trump does run, who would be his opponents in the Republican Party? Mike Pence, Chris Christie, Larry Hogan, some other people, TBD.
Maybe Kasich. I don't know.
But the major contenders in my mind of Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis, I do not believe would run against Trump. So if he does run, I think he rolls through the Christie, Pence, Hogan group.
Yeah.
And becomes the Republican nominee.
Well, it's not like a news cycle is going to derail him or any. There's no, you know, like scandal at this point that's going to change our opinion on Donald Trump. You know what I'm saying? Like, what would knock him out? I don't know. Probably not. And that was Bill Maher's point, too. He's talking about how the anti-Trump wing of the party has been essentially dismantled, knocked out. And the Republican should win the midterms. Kevin McCarthy should be Speaker of the House if that happens in 2022. Like, he'll have the infrastructure in place to pretty much run train on the Republican Party. This sounds scary. It is scary, but it's also not that hyperbolic. I think it's pretty...
If you break it down, it seems very, very not just plausible, but likely. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So here's another shoe to drop. Donald Trump becomes the Republican nominee. Does he get his social media accounts back? Because at that point, it's very difficult to take them away from someone who's literally the nominee of a major party.
Yeah.
So he probably gets social media back. He's running. And now let's take a step back for a moment to what the political landscape may look like then. Now, it's early days, but the Democratic administration is not doing so great in terms of the public eye, where... The last polling I saw put Joe in the low to mid 40s in terms
it's
of
low.
Approval rating.
Yeah, approval ratings are low for Joe Biden and dropping, I mean, by the numbers right now. Now, it happens sometimes before midterms, and like there are some historical precedent there, but it's not great.
Well, one of the things, and we can talk about this, where it's been a rough number of weeks or months for Joe and the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you imagine them rebounding in a way that everyone's like, oh, this is going great? I mean, let's say they pass... the infrastructure bill, they pass reconciliation, a couple of things start going right. I think their numbers could stabilize, but it's very difficult for me to imagine like a complete dynamic sea change where I think that there is a vibe that the Dems are giving off that right now they're kind of fractious and it's not happening for them. I mean, again, it could change. But let's play out what's likely to happen in the days to come. There's going to be a bit of a traffic jam legislatively down the stretch of the end of this year because they're trying to get a lot of things done.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to raise the debt ceiling and avoid default before year end, which is going to complicate life because in the Senate, and this is an inside baseball thing, but just to apprise you of what happened, they punted on it and temporarily raised the debt ceiling until December. But then Chuck Schumer decided to stick his thumb in the eye of every Republican.
Yeah.
And then Mitch McConnell afterwards was like, well, fuck that. Like, we're not going to play ball with you guys again by year end. And so for the Democrats to elevate the debt ceiling themselves, they'd have to do what's called a budget reconciliation. And apparently that process is a super pain in the neck, where one of the things I saw said that it actually will take like 2 weeks for them to raise the debt ceiling via budget reconciliation because of the technicalities. And I was like, what? So you can add that into the traffic jam elements.
This podcast is sponsored by Helix Sleep. I have always been a mattress guy. I thought if you're going to spend 8 hours doing something, you should pay attention to what you're doing it on. That's why I love the Helix Sleep product. It is made for me. I am someone who sleeps on my back. I do not sleep hot. I like a firm mattress. And so when I took the Helix Sleep quiz, I wound up with a Helix Dawn model. And it's been fantastic, not just for me, but for my kids who seek it out of the entire house. Don't want to take my word for it? Helix has been awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazine, and they have a 100-night free trial and 10 to 15-year warranties baked in. That's confidence in your product, and if you get on a Helix Sleep mattress, you will see why they are so confident. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/yang and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
So there's still going to be this on this dynamic where you don't feel like things are humming out of DC. Next fall is 2022, and traditionally the in-power party loses 10, 15, 18 seats in that instance. If you look at the House of Representatives, everyone's up for re-election. And right now the Democrats have a 5-seat edge. I looked at the markets, and they say there's about a 75% chance that Republicans retake the House. So people see it as very, very likely. Mm-hmm. And I will say I also see it as very, very likely because Democrats lost 13 seats in 2020.
Yeah.
Against Trump. Now things aren't humming for Democrats. So logically, like, which way do you think it's going to swing when, again, the in-power party traditionally loses 12, 15 seats? Mm-hmm. So then Kevin McCarthy becomes the Speaker of the House circa 2022. Not much is going to happen out of Washington for the next 2 years because, you know, a dysfunction will be back. Gridlock will be back in full force. And then Trump's storming back, 24. Who do the Democrats run against Donald Trump?
I'm assuming they're going to run Joe or Kamala. And if Joe doesn't run, he would be the heir apparent would be Kamala. I'm assuming that's the common sense amongst the party.
Joe Biden, pluses, incumbent president, defeated Trump already. Reasonable case. Downsides, will be 81 years old at that point, easily the oldest president to be running for office. And his numbers might not be that strong. He risks being a visual emblem of kind of a declining establishment. I mean, that's the risk for Democrats. What you want to do is have someone who's a bit fresher, and so you pass the baton to Kamala Harris. Problem, Kamala consistently polls 4 to 5 points worse than Joe.
Yeah.
And Kamala has a similar profile to Hillary Clinton, and hear me out on this politically.
I'm hearing you out.
So Kamala Harris is a blue state senator of a deep blue state in California. It's very, very TV-oriented state. She then runs for president and underachieves, loses, and then gets appointed by the person who defeated her to a very elevated post. You could use those words on Hillary Clinton or Kamala Harris, and they both are correct. And then when that person decides to run for president, that person struggles in part because they don't have that organic a connection to a lot of people. Like, you know, they're in that position because the person that defeated them appointed them. Mm-hmm. And so then they're getting presented as like, oh, you know this person, like you love them. And everyone's like, wait, do we love this person? Right. like when did this happen? Mm-hmm. So there are other elements too that make Kamala, in my mind, not a slam dunk. You get the sense that there are very different opinions about Kamala from within the Democratic Party. It's not a situation where Hillary Clinton, this is a very big distinction, Hillary Clinton knew everyone in the Democratic Party, and most everyone who was a capital E establishment was like, yeah, we're doing this Hillary thing. And Kamala doesn't have anywhere near the same level of unanimity. Mm-hmm. She had a longtime team, but that team has been kind of broken up around her. Mm-hmm. And as she's been put into the White House, she's been surrounded by essentially a subset of Biden folks.
Yeah.
And so if she were to run for president, then it would be a group of people that haven't really been through that many campaigns or wars together.
Mm-hmm. Do you think how much does race and gender play into her polls dropping from Biden? To me, she's like an establishment-y Dem, so you'd think the polls would be relatively similar. Now, I have other thoughts on Kamala. I didn't think she ran a great campaign. I thought we ran a much more savvy and like effective campaign. Thoughts on that, or is that looking into it too much? Or
Well, the big thing about her race and gender is that it's going to be extraordinarily difficult for anyone to say, you know what, it's not Kamala, it's me, whoever that person happens to be, particularly if that person's a white man, because then there are the optics of shoving aside the woman of color so that you run. So there's a very big...
No one wants to be that guy.
Yeah, no one wants to be that person. Yeah. Now, of course, if you're another woman of color, then that dynamic goes away. Mm-hmm. But I this is a very, very fascinating thing where I think if you were to draw it up, Joe even said at one point, I'm the bridge to the next generation. So after Joe gets in there and then Joe passes the baton to his VP, the Democratic Party rallies behind the VP, and the VP happens to be a woman of color. And so there would be a group of people that are very excited about that. And the capital B but in this is like, but Kamala consistently polls worse than Joe and doesn't really have that powerful and organic connection with like a lot of people. And to the extent that she was in the presidential crucible as a candidate, it didn't go that well. So those are your data points. Then you're looking at it being like, okay, this seems like a highly, highly risky move to consolidate behind Kamala. So after Joe and Kamala, then you can try and select someone as the next figure. But here's the thing. The party can't just turn around and appoint Amy Klobuchar or Pete and say, hey, you're going to be our nominee. There'd have to be a competitive primary. Mm-hmm. And then if you have that competitive primary, issue number one is Joe's still there. And then so you could say, well, Joe's like, hey, I'm not going to run again, so go ahead and have a competitive primary. But then Kamala's there. And so if you have a competitive primary, I believe that the Democrats will not want to have a competitive primary, particularly in the face of Donald Trump. And so that brings you back to Joe. Mm-hmm. I think it's most likely going to be Joe, with the major caveat, again, being health, is that if you're 81 years old, and if Joe does run for president, he'll be the incumbent. And so there's not going to be necessarily like a whole lot of campaigning and travel involved. I mean, you could do a lot of it sort of from the White House or TV style or whatnot, and maybe you send surrogates around the country. But I think that's a difficult... And he does have Air Force One. I mean, you know, it's like I've never been on, but it seems like a great way to travel.
Yeah, it seems pretty nice.
So if you map this out, it's probably Trump versus Biden again. But one of the things that Bill Maher said was that if you dig into it, according to Bill, it's not that important who the Dems run because Trump will either win outright. I don't know if Bill said that, but he said Trump is going to ignore vote totals and claim victory regardless.
Correct.
This podcast is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN is like changing while leaving your window wide open. You might not have anything to hide, but why give randos a chance to invade your privacy? When you go online without a VPN, ISPs can see every single website you visit, and they can legally sell this information without your consent to ad companies and big tech who can then use your data to target you and profit, not to your benefit, generally at your expense. So using ExpressVPN, it's like being a member of a high-tech company that's on your side, where they beam you into a server in another part of the world. No one can see anything you do. Just fire up the app, click one button, and you're beamed onto a completely safe, anonymized internet. They can't do anything with your data. I use ExpressVPN to have that peace of mind. To secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/yang today. That's expressvpn.com/yang. And you can get an extra 3 months for free. expressvpn.com/yang.
So, and Bill alluded to this too. Look, he said most things we had been talking about, and I'm glad we're talking about this. It feels like the Republicans are playing a different game than the Democrats. The Democrats are still in the fantasy world that this is a normal election, that the country's not in crisis, that and it's gotten worse. Like, we played a different game and had a good amount of success when we ran in 2020 because we knew the game had changed, and we knew that the traditional, that people are angry. There's financial insecurity and distrust across the country. The traditional gatekeepers of political power are, they're not broken, but they're cracking, which be it the media or elected officials or go down the list. The Republicans have in somewhat figured that out and lined up behind the Donald, for better or for worse, in many ways for worse. The Democrats are not. They're still like, good old Joe.
Well, this is the tough, and this is one of the things I, the Republicans have taken on this anti-institutionalist fervor.
Yeah.
And it has a lot of power and potency to it because people are looking up saying, yeah, shit sucks. These people are lying. It's all bullshit. Let's tear it down. Let's break it up. Here's the guy who's going to come and represent that that group, that set of beliefs. And then the Democrats are defending these fading institutions, saying, like, no, it's working. Give us a chance. You're awful. You're terrible. The problem is the institutions do have real problems. Mm-hmm. It was an easier case to make when Trump was in charge. Say, hey, put us in charge, then things will go well. And then now there's going to be this vibe. It's like, well, you are in charge, and I'm not loving life. Like, you know, life still kind of sucks. So it if you look at the anti-institutionalist fervor versus the defend the fading establishments, it's hard to imagine the latter prevailing decisively or in perpetuity. You know, I mean, right now the pendulum's just swinging back and forth and people are just pissed off. And this time they're going to be pissed off at the party mm-hmm. in power. So the Democrats are going to be casting about for an option, maybe, or maybe they're just going to settle on Joe, depending. I'm going to just throw out a figure just because I was thinking about who, if I were the Democrats, I would consider running. But again, you can't choose the person. They have to go through a competitive primary. Yeah. And the whole thing is like, you know, it's a...
Who's your pick? Who's your dark horse?
My dark horse is Senator John Ossoff from Georgia.
Wow.
Because he's young. He's social media savvy. He's freaking clean as a whistle, that guy. Like, you know, like that. There's really not much... he hasn't been around the system long enough to really have developed that much. He reminds me a bit of Obama when he first ran, where he'd been a senator for like 1-2 years, and mm-hmm. then people are like, oh, it's too much too soon, and then we're like, ah, we kind of like this guy. Like, that would be the kind of dice roll I would consider making if I were the Democrats. But again, you can't just choose that. You know, you'd have to go through a competitive primary. I have no idea if John would decide to run, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm just like throwing out there, like, variables. Because most people, when they think about the Democrats, they're only going to think about the folks who ran for president last time.
Stacey Abrams? Think she makes a play?
Stacey Abrams, I think she'd have to win her race in 22. And then I don't think she can just turn around and run from Georgia in 23 in that way. It's sort of easier if you're already in like DC, I think. But hey, you know, who knows? If you were the Dems, I would consider looking around a little bit. I suppose. But again, the dynamics cut very, very heavily against that because Joe's going to be the incumbent. Kamala's the logical next person. And you're going to start with those two, probably Joe.
So I guess this is the question. You kind of answered this, but I'm curious. Like what? So Bill painted a dark picture, right? He talked about the one of the things that Trump has been doing for one of the first times in his career is like behind the scenes, because you're normally in front of camera, setting up the infrastructure so that he can win no matter what.
He's toppling right? secretaries of state right. in various red states who didn't just find votes for him or certify results.
Right. So apparently 13 of 15 Republican secretaries of state in battleground states, of those, or of the 15, only two concede that Biden actually won. There's 13 of them that are just said Trump won. So that's like what we're talking about. And he'll theoretically and most likely call on them in 2024. If you're the Democrats, what do you do? And I think you're saying they should have the open primary and start looking into the bench because this doesn't look good. To me, these people are established. So if they're not beating Trump now, it's not going to – I don't see it getting – if you're looking at the polls in 2022, 2023, I don't see it in a world where it gets better by election day. I don't know what you think.
All right. And so this was also Bill's point, which I agree with, is like, look, you're going to be arguing about the wrong things. Mm-hmm. And even just now, I doubled down on arguing about the wrong things, which is like swapping candidates. Like
it probably
doesn't matter in the sense that the vote totals may not matter. What's going to matter is whether the machinery of our democracy actually has the credibility with a critical mass of people to send everyone home. Mm-hmm. It probably will not if the quote unquote, you know, loser or opponent just refuses to accept results. And there are tens of millions of people who are with that person. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens when you have a collapse of trust in a society.
Correct.
I mean, there just needed to be more trust. So if you're the Democrats, what do you do to try and prevent calamity? The single best thing you can do is to federalize some aspects of this election security and integrity. Mm-hmm. And there are bills that are on the table right now to do this, and they are running aground of the U.S. Senate and the filibuster rules, where right now all of the Dems are into them, except they can't get through a filibuster. They don't have the votes. And so in order to pass some of this election integrity stuff, you would need for Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin to actually say, yes, we're going to waive the filibuster just to protect our elections. And there are a lot of people that very much want them to do this. Another possibility is that 10 Republican senators like Mitt Romney and the crew stand up and say, you know what? I'm actually going to go with the Democrats in terms of
election security,
integrity
right,
and security. So in other words, what you do is you take the results and have some kind of national verification and standard, as opposed to just leaving everything to local authorities. And this, you'd think, I don't know if you're listening to this and thinking, like, I totally think we should do this. I'm going to share something that's not public knowledge, but I'm going to share it. I was actually with Kyrsten Sinema, not with, but like, you know, in the same place last week. And she was asked directly, hey, what do you think about this issue? And she said that, you know, the filibuster is not something that she is going to break, even for election integrity. So it seems like you are left looking for 10 Republicans.
So when you talk about federalizing our elections or federally protecting our elections, how is that? Instead of giving it to local authorities, local states to administer elections and ballots, things like that, that's giving the power to the federal government. How's that work?
So what you want to have at the state level is nonpartisan officials who essentially say, yeah, this is what the result was.
Right.
And at least in some of these states, they're saying, no, let's give it to the state legislators to decide what the election result was, which I'm going to suggest is probably not the way you want to go. It's like, you know, because
you don't want Democrats saying,
yeah, who's more political than the freaking like literally like the political actors.
If there's people paid to be nonpartisan, that does tend to work, or, you know, or a lot of our, even the volunteers are very, very strict. Some of that. Anyway.
So what there is in a proposal that's in the Senate right now, they want to establish federal protections to insulate nonpartisan state and local officials who can administer federal elections and not get bullied.
Insulate, which, how does that work?
Probably means they can't get fired.
Got it.
So,
oh, yeah, you're working for a Republican Secretary of State, pressuring you a certain way.
Yeah.
Got it.
So that, I think is pretty common sense. Okay. Again, you don't want folks whose jobs depend upon them saying taking a certain a result happened.
Yeah.
So this is something that you want to have passed. And right now it's running aground of the filibuster and the fact that we have this duopoly where this seems somehow partisan. And because if you're a Republican senator, you're looking at this, and then if you vote for it, even though I'm going to suggest it is pretty common sense, and if you believe in democracy, you should be like, sure, like let's just not.
I'm sure the progressives or some far left wing of the party will throw something in there that ticks off the right, and then you could turn it down without, you know, for on basis of that and not everything else. I mean, there's a million reasons in the duopoly why people end up turning down rational bills on a high level, at least.
Yes. So that's the situation. There are all these calls now in the national media to try and exhort moderate Republicans to get with the program and try and protect our elections.
Right.
I agree with this. I think that we should. There was an op-ed in the Washington Post that was essentially begging some Republicans to do this. Mm. There's a new New York Times story about Republicans saying we should support Democrats in some cases if it's going to help the country survive during this time. They're essentially never Trumpers. Mm-hmm. They say they were considering starting a third party, which sounds familiar, but they decided to go in this direction. So if I were the Democrats, what I would be doing, and the thing is Democrats can't do this, which is one reason why the Ford Party is necessary and why we're going to do it or push the resources necessary to hopefully get this done. But the problem Democrats have, there are a lot of problems, but like the systems aren't strong enough, and Democrats try and cast this as like defeating Republicans, and there are two issues. Number one, you may not be able to defeat them in the right places via just vote totals, and number two, it may not matter. Mm. So those are the two things you want to try and get right, and too many Democrats just stay fixated on number one. They just think like, you know, what it is we just have to defeat them more soundly, give us more money, give us more votes, and it's like, okay, you may be missing the point. Mm. And by the way, that plan might not even work because, and you know, you just might not get as many votes as the other side. So when you look at number two, how do you make the system and the structure more genuinely resilient and representative and lowercase d democratic, like actually responsive mm-hmm. to the will of the people? So that's where something like open primaries and ranked choice voting would come in. And to me, this is where we should be running, not walking, to say, look, we've got one cycle, 2022, to try and make real changes in a system that would enable a critical mass of legislators to have some genuine independence and be able to act on principle or patriotism and not partisanship.
Right.
So let's try and lighten up the partisan motivations as quickly as possible. And we can actually do it if we were to pass ballot initiatives in a number of states.
Right. In a way, the problem Bill Maher identified was what you've been trying to solve for since starting Forward Party.
For an entire 10 days. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I've been, you know, working on different things for longer than that. But
this has been, this is part of the, like the problem you identified in your book is actually what Bill Maher is talking about. Like, this is how this plays out, which is a form of a civil war.
Well, we have a very, very fragile system. And this is one of the things I want to convey to folks is that our founding fathers, if they woke up, they would be shocked and horrified that we have this terrible, terribly dysfunctional duopoly because it's so vulnerable. If you have an authoritarian leader who takes control of one of the major parties, all of a sudden there are no safeguards because the founding fathers never imagined a party at this scale And they wouldn't think that everyone would just fall in line, but that's where all their political incentives are, to fall in line. If you mm-hmm. don't fall in line, you lose your job. Mm-hmm. So the path out would be to make it so that you don't just have two parties, you have five parties, right. you have seven parties, like Germany, where then if one party loses its shit, it's a problem, but it's not an existential problem.
Right.
Like, that's what you want to do. You want to try and make the system more resilient. So in a way, it'd be like very Zen-y. Now, Democrats don't think this way, but they should. Is that if you look at it and say, hey, what's the problem? Okay, I think this guy's coming and he's a jerk and it's going to be terrible if he wins. So let's defeat him. It's like, well, it's not quite the problem. It's like, okay, let's try and make it so that the system is more dynamic, more representative, partisanship doesn't govern, Republicans and Democrats alike would be able to actually exercise their judgment more, third party, fourth party would emerge. This is like a democracy reform package. And the problem is that Democrats, because they're partisans, don't think in terms of democracy reform. Right. They think just in terms of just beat the other team.
Do you think we have enough time to do this? And if not, is the best thing we can do is to have more people primary or enter the Democratic primary? Or, you know, if we don't, let's say you don't get enough third party representation or open primaries and local elections by 2022.
So this is where it kind of gets interesting. So the number one is trying to make the system more resilient and dynamic and sustainable. And we have one election cycle to do it.
Right.
So in an ideal world, we pass open primaries and ranked choice voting and let's call it, I'm going to be ambitious and aggressive, 8 states.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden you have 16 senators who look up and be like, hey, I can actually do what I want now because I don't need to go through the hyper-partisan 20% Republican primary or Democratic primary. I can appeal to the broad population.
Right.
At that point, I think you'd see a lot more people interested in election integrity whatnot because it would seem less
partisan.
Yeah, less partisan.
Right.
So that's
plan number one.
That's plan number one.
Plan number two. Let's say we get 2 states, not enough senators.
Yes. Or none.
I mean, yeah, that's realistic. Yeah, really. This is hard.
Like a grand total of 1 has ever happened. So, you hope you get some non-zero number, but 0 is a possibility. So let's prevent that. Forwardparty.com. Let's go get it. Let's try and push some of these states across the finish line. So let's just play out the 24 scenario, and it really does raise a specter of something very, very rough approaching that time, because you can imagine Trump having these dark rallies around the country, and then the Democrats...
Potentially violent rallies, yeah.
Yeah, potentially violent rallies. And so one of the things I'm going to suggest to the world is that you have Democrats representing the fading establishment, you have Republicans representing this anti-institutional fervor, and what you want is you still want a dynamic change.
Right.
You want someone to represent the rejuvenation of institutions, like a positive outsiderness. Mm-hmm.
Positive populism in a way.
Right? Yes, positive populism, benevolent transformation, mm-hmm. something where you don't pretend that the institutions are working or that they're somehow going to reform themselves. So you're like a positive reform movement
right.
that can absorb at least some of the energy out there, like provide a different path and course and narrative, but also absorb some of the anti-institutional energy and channel it in a positive way.
Right.
Now, and this is one thing that does drive me a little bit nuts where, start the Forward Party and what's the number one thing? Yeah, you're going to fuck it up. You're going to get Trump elected. Da, da, da. It's like, well, there's so many things that I have to unpack about this. Number one, we're focused on 2022. Mm-hmm. So let's try and get that done. But then there's then if you do fast forward to 24, and I'm not saying that that I'm going to run necessarily. But if you look at two candidates, average or the average age between the two of them, I think it would be 78 years old. Joe will be 81. Trump will be 77. So it would be 79, I guess. I do think that there's going to be a real gap in the market.
Yeah.
I think if someone were to run in from a third party, I think they'd start out with 10, 15%, something along those lines pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to suggest that that might not be something you mind if you're the Democrats, because I think the Democrats might have like a really tough position that they're defending. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like where if you, and so this is one of the things where you like shake your head, where like Democrats seem to think that like every vote comes from them, you know, and it's like at this point, there are a lot of people who are unhappy that are looking for an alternative. And if you had, let's say, I'm just going to throw this out there, like a Mark Cuban figure, I think he gets a ton of votes. Mm-hmm. And I think he gets a ton of votes from people who were going to vote for Trump otherwise.
Right. Whoever runs, I think, will probably be more anti-Trump than anti-Biden. Not sure. But that tends to be, I think, Schultz and Bloomberg and Cuban, the types that have explored this, probably lean that way. So who knows? But that is the plan. Now, is there a third option that the Democrats start doing better? Like getting like their approvals are up and they actually can win because the majority of American people are satisfied with the job performance?
Oh, yeah, I think that that's possible, but I'm not optimistic. And here's why. So there was a Politico journalist who said something that really stuck with me. He said that there's a danger we're entering this postmodern era of politics where it doesn't really matter what I do. It just matters what people are hearing in their partisan spin bubbles. Mm-hmm. Where you like to believe that facts on the ground will influence how people feel and how people vote. And unfortunately, I think we're in like an era where that might not be as true as you'd hope.
Right.
Like a lot of the feelings and messages that people have are getting filtered through the media in various ways. And I think people are developing a sense of this administration and that even if a bunch of legislation gets passed, like the dynamic wouldn't necessarily revert. I mean, could things get better for Democrats? Of course. Mm-hmm. Like these elections are a long way away. A lot of things can happen, a lot mm-hmm. of variables. But at this point, and this is one of the reasons why the Forward Party is so important, is that the polarization is so extreme that you're not trafficking in facts anymore for a lot of people. Like they're just, you know, I'm pissed off. This shit sucks. Like who's in power? Vote these bums out. You know, like I gave them a chance and that, you know, it's not like that's the way a lot of people feel. Even with this child tax credit, which, by the way, I love the child tax credit. It's the best thing the government's done ever. That like there are a lot of people that don't realize who to thank, which in this case that was 100% Dems, like the Dems freaking passed that thing. And so if I were the Dems, I would be jumping up and down every 15th of the month saying, you know, that check you're getting, like, that's us. Yep. Like every freaking month, if I were Joe Biden, I'd be like, child tax credit, like it's us, love it.
Yep.
Every rep, have an event in your community, find some recipient, which is not going to be hard because there are like 70 million Americans that are benefiting from it. Just find someone who's getting the child tax credit and just hammer that message. Say like, this is us. But right now, like that sort of communication is not happening. And I think that there is like a real negativity that's setting in.
Right. Politico and Morning Consult came out with a poll the other day. It had less than 40% of respondents of this poll said that the child tax credit had a major impact on their lives of the, you know, those that have received it. And then half of them, 47%, credited the Democrats for passing it, but only 38% credited Joe Biden. That disconnect, no one really knows. I mean, there's many people who speculate. No one really knows why. It's probably, to your point, these either partisan spin bubbles or disinformation bubbles that are everywhere, but on both sides.
They should be hammering this message.
Yeah.
You know, Joe, again, 15th of every month, to stand up there, give a speech, be like, with some families, be like, got the child tax credit.
Yeah.
Love it. Best thing I've done. Love it. You know, get that 38% up. Get it up to,
yep,
you know, above 50, and then you have a better argument. But this is like, so one of the things I almost tweeted out the other day, and this is something I do feel. Politicians take credit for things all the time that they had nothing to do with, mm-hmm. and they take blame for things they had nothing to do with too.
Yep.
And so that's really what's happening in a lot of these lights. Like you look at the mess on the border, I mean, these awful scenes, and people are like, oh, Trump's gone, and the border will get better. It's like the border is a mess regardless of who's in charge. Like they can't recruit people to actually work in the U.S. Border Patrol because, by the way, it's like the shittiest job in the world in the middle of nowhere that pays less than other federal jobs. And, oh, by the way, what are you doing? Like corralling, you know, migrants who are coming in. It's like, does that sound like a job that, you know, like you burn out on it, like, you know, like a minute. And so then you put Joe in charge and everyone's like, what? There are still problems there? You know, like, yeah, of course there are going to be problems there. It's like the problem is that there's like this myth that, you know, oh, I put you in charge and all of a sudden, like, you know, like you're going to make it better because you're a nice person and the other person's not a nice person. It's like, no, the problem is that you have deep, thorny problems and really ineffective bureaucracies that aren't delivering. Right. And if I put like a different person in charge, like you still have a lot of the same problems. And so that's why this is one of the big reasons why things are getting so nasty here is that we're all just fed up and frustrated. Like value is not being delivered. You have these completely impersonal bureaucracies that are just, you know, failing. And then and we act like it's like, you know why it's failing? Because that person's an asshole.
Yeah.
And then we put you in charge and then it's like, oh, you mean it's still failing? Oh, shit. And then like you know, I mean,
yeah.
Philip Howard called this like we're playing you lose, I lose while the people lose.
Right.
And during that entire period, our trust is just going down and down and down and down, like down and down. And that's where we are now. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, the big antidotes to this are multipolar political system, open primaries, ranked choice voting, and then universal basic income, because I can actually deliver that. Mm-hmm. I can get you the check. I can't make these shitty bureaucracies work better overnight, but mm-hmm. I can get you that money in your account. You know, we have to start being honest and stop bullshitting about what we can and can't do.
Let me ask you this. I don't know if there's a better, I don't think there's a better example of this. So Donald Trump in 2016, what did he run on? Build the wall, drain the swamp, essentially, right? And then maybe you could argue like a middle finger to the political
staff. Lock her up.
Right. That was yeah, there. Anti-Hillary, right? When he was in power with a Republican House and Senate, right, didn't really pass much. A tax cut for the rich, and they kind of rolled back some Obamacare stuff.
They stacked really. A lot of courts. They love that.
They stacked, but they did the courts, true, which is a big thing. But we didn't build the wall, really. Still had issues on the border.
Definitely didn't drain the swamp.
And we definitely didn't drain the swamp. If you can argue,
it got swampier,
right? However, his approval ratings have gone up since he left. He still has this massive army. People still think he won. He got more votes in 2020. I think to your point earlier that the facts on the ground don't matter. I think that's kind of where we're at, right?
And this is one of the things that I say this in my book because I was right adjacent to these races where he got a ton more votes in districts around the country where, again, Republicans picked up 12 seats. And so this is one of the things where I saw and was like, oh my gosh, like there's like this rising enthusiasm mm-hmm. for him. And I thought that going into November 2020 that Trump was at his worst, like COVID was
yeah, beat up
and it just seemed like, you know, like this is totally the wrong guy for the job. And despite that, he got millions more votes. I think he got 75 million votes. And
there were states he was supposed to get stomped in. He did not. He either almost won or did win, Pennsylvania being one of them. A lot of the swing states, he was super close, even if he didn't win it.
Yeah, and this really had an impact on me where like the forces are rising on that side. And I do think that this period is going to make many, it's going to dispirit a lot of Democratic voters. And it's going to energize people who are still angry, mm-hmm. You know, and there is like, you and I are sports fans, mm-hmm. you know, the entire guy gets traded and he comes back and plays against his old team. And mm-hmm. there's like always the revenge.
Attitude.
And when that happens, am I the only one who thinks that that player tends to overperform? Like,
oh yeah,
they're ticked off,
it's like it's like the guy who breaks up or gets dumped, and then you know loses 20 pounds and gets in shape and fixes his hair and just looks like you know.
He's got also, like this sounds kind of personal. I'm kidding. So I mean, Trump.
You're just saying though, right? Break up, like you're.
Yeah, control. Right. Oh no. I was kidding, man. I mean,
yeah, man. We get back on the market.
We've been there. Trump's going to have that kind of payback energy.
Right. Yeah. And so will his supporters.
Yeah.
That felt like they were robbed. It's what my fear is what starts happening in practice. Because there's stuff I've always like leaned a little more conservative on. I think free markets and government are usually better than whatever government bureaucracy or over too many rules start created. But
Then you look at the Texas abortion law and some of the things that the Republicans, when in power, start doing, and you're like, I mean, there's no way to look at that law. There's even like decently conservative Republicans are like, that law's fucked up. And that's my fear of what this starts happening, because I don't think Trump has a grip on that. Don't have a grip on a lot of things, I think. But, you know, like that's where I think this play, that's what we're, I think, fighting for. It's like these kind of backwards policies that end up getting passed when you end up with that party in charge and not, let's call it strong leadership at the top.
Well, we may be in position to find out if we don't see something that changes the dynamic. You thinking in 22 or 24, like 24 if they were to assume power, or are you thinking in states around the country?
So I think it's both, right? Like Bill Maher was talking about how you'll have, it's like the ripple effect of this. It's not just the presidency. You've got Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan governor races all happening, which mean, and he predicts two of those will go red. Which means when a when there's a red governor, that usually means you have state legislators and House and Senate seats going red as well. They usually follow the top of the ticket like that. And then you end up, I don't know, I think on a congressional level, it looks like 2022, you'll probably end up with just dysfunction and like the kind of gridlock again. But if you end up with this Trump movement again, I don't know. And then is what happens in 2028? Things seem to be getting worse, not better.
So one thing we didn't talk about is the composition of the U.S. Senate. So 75% chance, approximately, according to the markets, that Republicans retake the House in 22. Right now, the Senate's tied 50-50. Mm-hmm. The Senate map is not bad for Democrats in 22. There is a real chance that they stay tied, lose one seat, gain one seat. Like, it's around that order of magnitude. For Democrats in 22, 24, then the dynamic is a bit tougher. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, it's going to be during a national election, so it's unclear.
Right.
But this is one of the things I'd say, and this is funny because like I'm an optimistic, upbeat guy. I'm can do, like, you know, trying to make positive things happen. Got to try and strengthen the system and increase our reasonableness and reward. Folks who are, you know, like avoiding, like, you know, insane positions and the rest of it. But the problem we have to grapple with is that, like, our institutions are corroding, and we're at a point in American life where everything is possible. And when I mean that, I generally mean that negatively. It's like whatever dark, crazy scenario you can imagine, it is on the table. Yeah. You know, you should take it very, very seriously.
Yes.
And if you doubt that, then just rewind over the last number of months and think about the darkest things that you have seen happen here in America. And many of those things would have been unthinkable just X months prior. Mm-hmm. You know, January 6th, the violence of the preceding year, George Floyd dying before our eyes, like you know, pandemic, obviously,
old Asian woman beat up on the street in New York City.
Yeah, just so any unthinkable stuff you can imagine is on the table. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I'm going to suggest is that everything could be on the table positively, too, if enough of us got together. Like people say, like, oh, Ford party, third party can't happen. It's like, well, 62% of people want an alternative. So enough of us get together, like, we can probably do something that's never been done before. Universal basic income impossible. It's like, well, at this point, like, 2/3 of Americans want that too. And like, yep, we already have versions of it. Like, good things can be done also much more quickly than people imagine. But right now, the prevailing forces are leading us towards, right, like, incredibly negative things happening. Everything should be on the table. That could be a takeaway from today, is that everything should be on the table. And when you look at 2024 and you just think, oh, like, this person win, that person win, Bill Maher and others, Robert Kagan and others, are correct that this actually could be unprecedented and not follow the script at all in terms of people staying at home and saying, okay, that's what happened, and then going on with their lives the next day.
You sound like Tristan Harris, who said the internet is the ability to create utopia and dystopia like that, and it's deciding which way we go. And your point, and we've all learned this, is that it's going to happen way faster than things normally happen, right? You get a massive, massive change in a matter of months and years and not, you know, decades and centuries in ways. So
yeah, just got to use it for the good. Got to use this time acceleration factor for the good and not just the bad.
So podcasts of action, number one, forwardparty.com.
Yes.
Which you're doing a lot of, and it's a ton of the local work, which I'm like a fan of. And two, you're on Bill Maher next Friday.
I am, but I'm going to Chicago, Atlanta, Denver, California.
SF, LA. That's it? Eventually Iowa.
Iowa.
You're on the road. Yang's on the road.
Yeah.
So that's what we're not just, I just don't want, this podcast isn't one where we just complain on it all the time. We can complain with action around it.
Yeah, so I don't have it in me to just be like, oh, someone do that and then go and, you know, chill out. Because, especially now, because I'm someone who actually might be able to move the needle on these issues to a higher, which I thank everyone who's listening to this or watching this because you make it so. But yeah, like there aren't that many people who can help modernize things to a point where we can get through this time. And I believe I can help. So I'm going to do my best. So yeah, we're just not talking it, man. We're trying to walk the walk.
Here we are. All right, guys. Thank you for tuning in.
Forward ho! Forward! Forward!
We need like an exit music so we can
outro.
Outro.
Hit that outro.
Outro, baby.